So we're here for our 3:30 item, a discussion of augmentation for the Metro District's moratorium on the vault program. So who'd like to start talking?
I can do that.
That'd be great, Todd, if you would.
We have a couple of the board members and the district manager here. We requested this meeting. Let me give you I'll try to be short, which is very difficult for any attorney, but I'll try to be short. The subject that we wanted to meet with you about is the ongoing intergovernmental agreement which the district has with the county for what has sometimes been called the vault program. The history of that is, I'll try to be brief. In 1982, the district and the county negotiated to try to find some way to allow construction of what we thought were going to be seasonal cabins in the area in Stagecoach, which included somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 platted lots that Woodmore had platted over, the Woodmore Corporation had platted over a period of time in the early 70s, and then had gone bankrupt. That bankruptcy caused the Morrison Creek District to file a Chapter 9 governmental bankruptcy proceeding. And by 1982, it was operating under that proceeding, under that bankruptcy court order, and could not finance any additional infrastructure to those lots. The concept was fairly simple. The county then had its rules with respect to septic systems and had approved the Woodmore subdivisions on the premise that they would be served with water and sewer from the district, which was no longer going to be possible. The concept was that for many of these lots, that if they could obtain physical access to install a vault for containing of the septic stuff.
Effluent.
Sewage.
That the district would arrange to have contract pumpers come and be able to pump them out, even though the size of the lot would be much less than the 5-acre minimum for an approved septic system. That agreement contemplated several documents. It contemplated a landowner agreement signed by the lot owner, in which the lot owner agreed to certain provisions and certain promises. It provided for a form agreement for a pumper contract. The IGA obligated the Morrison Creek District as the backup to arrange to remove septic effluent if somebody failed to pump their vault, which on a couple occasions we've had to do as a district. That IGA was then modified twice. There are two modifications. The most recent one was, I don't remember what the most recent was, but it was in the last 7 or 8 years or 9 years. So it's not that long ago.
Yep.
Those modifications contemplated some more stringent standards with respect to the evidence of an acceptable roadway into the lot for the purposes of getting a pumper truck into the vault, provided for additional documents which a lot owner would have to sign with the county on some notifications of that the county wanted to have, provided clarity on the payment of what the district adopted as vault impact fees, which I think originally there probably was no fee. Currently there's a vault impact fee, which is a significant expenditure for a lot owner.
Who does the lot owner pay the impact fee to?
The district.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
What I want to focus in on is, so this is the basic arrangement, and it's operated to the extent of 90-some homes that are on the vault system. You may be aware, I know Doug is aware anyway, that also about 8 or 9 years ago, it seems about that long ago, the district proposed to modify the IGA to put a cap on the total outstanding number of vaults that would be done throughout the district. That raised a great deal of concern among lot owners, SPOA, realtors. After several hearings, the county concluded that it did not want to amend the IGA to put a cap, so there is currently no cap. There is in each subdivision a requirement that there can be no more vaults than the gross acreage of that subdivision divided by 5, so the equivalent of 5 acres. Currently, only one subdivision at Stagecoach is close to that number. The Morningside subdivision is within less than a handful of lots. Further lots could be theoretically developed under that limitation. It's had significant number of homes using vaults constructed in the last 15 or so years. Let me focus in on the part that is now of significant concern to the district, and that is the IGA contains, includes as exhibits, each of these documents and the program. So we can't really change any part of the program on either side unless we modify the intergovernmental agreement. The landowner agreement that a landowner signs and generally picks up at the, I assume it's the building department or county planning department, I'm not sure which.
There's a number of places. It's on our website.
And picks up off of the website of the district and so forth. The concept is the landowner picks up this landowner agreement, and it is an agreement between just the district and the lot owner. And the lot owner signs that, generally goes in to see Steve Colby, is told that the lot owner needs to obtain the forms for a well permit, and the agreement contemplates that the lot owner will get those well permit forms completed with a check for the well to be in the name of the district. All of the exempt wells out there have been historically from the beginning of the vault program, to the extent they're in, under the vault program, in the name of the district, and then brings that check and the forms in. Steve passes that on to the division engineer's office, and the landowner agreement contemplates that the district does not warrant that there will be a well permit issued, does not promise one will be issued, says the lot owner has to provide whatever information the division engineer's office requires, and if one is issued, then it's up to the lot owner to build the well within the time frame required by the state statutes, and it's their responsibility to pay for it. And generally speaking, we don't have an ongoing monitoring system, we the district, for all those exempt well permits. We expect people to follow through and construct the wells, get their well completion reports filed, their beneficial use report filed.
Even so, though the well permit is in the name of the district.
Even though the well permit's in the name of the district. That has generally worked. There have been a couple instances that we know in one instance, for example, where a well permit was obtained. The lot owner, for some reason, decided to hook on to an adjacent well and never completed the well, which is now complicated because that adjacent well was a one-house-only exempt well.
It was so, the same builder.
It was the same builder. But there was not the dealing back and forth with the district. Yet, there was, in my judgment, there was at least an implication that this, under this program, when somebody started it and they came in and signed these documents, gave the district and gave them an impact fee, which is about
$15,000. $1,818.
That they were going to end up getting a well permit, and this process was going to go through, and they could start planning their construction of their road, and, you know, they can move forward. So in the landowner agreement provided that if the district ever gets a water line within the statutory distance from the lot, then they have to abandon their well and connect into the water system of the district. So, and of course, the lot owner agreement then had a whole different section dealing with the vaults and the vault program and the pumping and all that, which is not what is at issue here today. It is not at issue before the district.
I need to ask a dumb question real quick. So someone can get a, up until now at least, has been able to get a well permit on a lot that's smaller than 5 acres?
Yes, because there are like 1,500 of them out there.
Okay.
There are, you know, that was the methodology. And without this program, if somebody had less than 5 acres anywhere else in the county, they can't build.
The sewer was the holdup.
The sewer is the holdup.
Right. In general,
you'd have to have this vault program. And the district has been able to operate with the influx of the septic into its sewer plant. That took a while to work through with pumpers. We've had a few pumpers come and go. But generally, it's operating fine. It's a little hard on a sewer plant to suddenly have a whole bunch of septic come in, bam, and particularly if you then the same day had some more come in. So you have to try to spread that out. But the system has been generally working. I think one difference that we did not anticipate when we started the program was the number of homes that are really year-round homes now on the program. I think the general thought process that it was going to be almost entirely seasonal home, seasonal cabins, you know, second home sort of deal. So,
before you go on, I want to ask a question
too.
So do you guys sign off on building permits, do you not?
Yes.
Yes.
For the vaulted ones and the wells, you still sign off on the building.
Yes.
I have to give approval to
that. That's generally showing my building department that there's available water and sewer.
That they've fulfilled all the requirements to get.
That's close enough.
Right.
That's fine. Thank you.
And then I've got a quick one for Eric. When someone applies for a well permit, you look at it, and if you see that it's inside of Morrison Creek Water and Sanitation District, you direct them back to Morrison Creek.
No, we've never directed them back to Morrison Creek.
I think they've already been to Morrison Creek.
No, I'm talking about if I own 5 acres or whatever out in Stagecoach, I have to go through Morrison Creek Water and Sanitation District to get a well.
Right.
I can't go directly to you. You'll say no.
Well, that is correct. Okay. So applications, Steve will often bring applications into the office, and maybe you bring all of them in, but they're always in Morrison Creek's name. Yes.
And you know that. You would never
for the vault program. Yeah, they're supposed to be in our name.
But I'm just talking about, is it possible that if I own
we
wouldn't parcel sign out there and I just went straight to the division to get a well permit, that it would bypass you guys?
It's possible, but we would not approve of the, theoretically, we would not approve a building permit to be issued.
Yeah, I'd consider it would, a zoning violation as well, because in the residential zone districts, high and low, which is Stagecoach, that it has to be part of that central system. And through the creation of the vault agreement, it was still understood that if the wells are in the district's name, it's still a central part of the central system.
Okay.
Same thing with the vaults. If it goes to the sewer treatment facility,
okay,
it's still part of the system.
Okay, here's the complicating factor.
You got a lot less use for the vaults if you don't have water to put in. Yeah.
The complicating factor is that from a water rights standpoint, the Stagecoach area has multiple drainages. The south end, where most of the Woodmore platted lots exist, is within the Morrison Creek drainage and the Morrison, Bushy Creek, Morrison Creek, some other tributaries, and that flows through a canyon comes, of course, has a confluence with the Yampa below Stagecoach Dam. That stretch of the of water has multiple irrigator, several irrigation water rights on it, and within the last 10 years, a couple of stretches of in-stream flow for the, that the CWCB holds. A little further north is the Little Morrison Creek drainage, which comes in and goes right by the sewer treatment plant. Comes into that bay where the sewer treatment plant is located.
South Shore. By the South Shore.
Goes, yeah, and goes through the edge of South Shore. And that has some very small, it's, I mean, it's a, not a very big producing tributary, obviously, and has some minor water rights, but it also has a 1977 1 second foot in-stream flow right on it. Then there's portions of the district in the north end, south of the reservoir, both over, just broadly described, toward the ski area, and a little corner over on South Shore that are either tributary to a couple of smaller streams that have no real substantive impacts locally, or are really tributary to the reservoir itself. Okay. All of the Yampa River, including all of the tributaries above the city of Steamboat Springs, was declared to be over-appropriated by the State Division of Engineers in 2006, give or take. When that happens, there are statutory provisions on exempt wells that Aaron can talk about. Can talk about it. Hopefully, we'll talk about it. That permit the state engineer and division engineer to take a look at potential material injury to water rights created by the extent of exempt wells that are issued. And if there is material injury, the state engineer and division engineer are entitled to say that you, in order to avoid this injury resulting from the number of wells, you cannot get further permits without having some water source that will replace, because most wells have delayed depleting impacts. You pull up the water, and when you shut it off, they're still impacting the river for some period of time. That you cannot get a permit without having an augmented, what's called a water augmentation plan, another source of water.
Or 35 acres.
Or that you're on, what, yeah, if you're, or you're over, you're 35 acres or more. Or there are some provisions in cluster developments that's basically on an average of about double that number. It's basically on, anyway, that isn't applicable here. That's not our problem here. The problem is that there is virtually no augmentation water source south of the reservoir. There's the reservoir, which is great, but because of some Colorado case law that occurred in the last 10, 15 years, I think on Clear Creek, if I remember right, you can't be in a position where an overappropriated system results in someone using a downstream reservoir to supply and there and injuring those in between that are senior to you. In effect, if you're diverting water high in a basin, as a result of that and some other concerns, Aaron notified the district and I think the county and a number of others within the last month or so that her office and the state engineer office was looking at whether they needed to make a declaration that further exempt wells would require, in certain portions of stagecoach, would require proof of an augmentation plan. Now, the district has, since 2009, been litigating establishing a comprehensive augmentation plan for its existing municipal wells in its existing potable system, and for up to 30 additional new wells in the future for its potable system, sufficient to supply all the water if Stagecoach builds out to the extent of 5,000 people, more or less. But though that, and we're very close to finishing those decrees, we're within a month or two away
from getting.
Where's
the aug water for that coming from? Those.
The aug water is, interestingly enough, is coming from the Black Horse 2 1 million gallon water tank up in Black Horse 2. Half a million. That tank is barely used because right now we have 14 users on the south system.
Okay.
Barely used, and has the capability to dribble out either into Bushy Creek and into the Morrison system, or over a very small divide into the Little Morrison, the amount necessary to replace the depletion from the wells.
Yep.
Because you're not talking about the version, you're talking about replacing the depletions.
Right.
So that will work for a significant period of time. At the rate of development back in the South End, you got 40 years and 14 houses, but about, that's the average of one house every 3 years connecting in the South End. So, it just isn't, it's a slow process. But those cases are not designed and do not include rights for exempt wells, for individual residences. They are only for the potable water supply system of the district. The district essentially is supposed to be in the central municipal supply business. We got into this program in 1982 because we were under a bankruptcy court plan that would not permit for 22 years the ability, even if we wanted to construct anything, any more lines. So as a result of that direction, and we don't know what the final position is going to be of the State Division engineers, what they'll come down with, whether they'll find certain areas are still exempt and able to get exempt well permits, certain other areas aren't, that depends upon the approval date by the county of some of the states of the subdivision. The statute has a June 1, 1972 critical cutoff date, and actually has a slightly earlier date that may be relevant.
To the Senate Bill 70, Senate Bill 35,
yeah,
discussion.
And certain portions of the district are included within the Upper Yampa's master water augmentation plan. Generally speaking, without complicating map drawings and so forth, all of Morrison Creek is not under that plan, is not in the plan, couldn't be in the plan. The plan would have to be amended to put it in.
Based on that Supreme Court ruling, you couldn't aug water above you.
Well, it was done because we couldn't provide a supply, and the opposers at that time were going to go to the mat with us on whether we could include it at all.
Is Morrison Creek over-appropriated?
Because of the fact that everything above Steamboat is over-appropriated, that's what everything the city RISD absolute water right create, even though they have never called it, created because it's an in-stream flow, in effect. And if they once they were able to measure it, they could make a call if they were short. you know, Aaron's office.
The short answer to the question
The answer is...
anything up Morris.
Everything above the C and D hold in Steamboat. And okay. all its carries are over appropriated. The master augmentation plan of the Upper Yampa District does include the Little Morrison Basin and the areas that are part under Middle Creek or No Name Creek or that it fall into the reservoir.
Doesn't include Little Morrison Creek.
No, wait a minute.
Yeah. Well, it does, yeah.
It includes Morrison Creek, but there is a clause in there that says, Upper Yampa, you cannot issue any augmentation contracts until you obtain and provide an augmentation source that will meet the needs for augmenting whatever you're seeking to augment in Little Morrison Creek, such as the Morrison Creek Reservoir. I don't know, name a couple other things, or whatever other source is acceptable to the division engineer. Obviously, there is no other source up there that has been proposed by the Upper Yampa District or sought for review, and therefore, the Upper Yampa District cannot issue any augmentation contracts within the Little Morrison Drainage. So that leaves only a relatively small northern area of the district in which, and a fair portion of that area, in a good part of Morningside, we have central water and sewer. So it leaves a relatively small area when you compare the whole 11,000 acres that is able either to be outside of those drainages or have an Upper Yampa, be able to get an Upper Yampa contract. As a result of that, we need to have a discussion about how to rethink and make what are obviously some necessary changes to the vault program to take into account these events. We obviously need to await the decision making by Aaron's office and the state engineer because we don't know where they're going to end up on these issues and exactly how that's going to end up. But it is obvious to the Morrison Creek Board that the assumption that lot owners would normally have that if they read the landowner agreement, complied with it, brought in the forms, gave a $100 check, that bingo, you know, it's up to the Morrison Creek District to get them a well. Even though we disclaimed that, that's what's been true for 90 homes. So we need to have, from the district standpoint, some discussion, which the board has not had, about where it wants to go in terms of modification. I can tell you, because I have said so publicly at meetings for the last several years, that the district needs to think about getting out of being the owner of the exempt wells. And but the board hasn't decided what it will do in this regard. But the board obviously knows it can't. If somebody walked in tomorrow with a landowner agreement and a $100 check and a $16,000 impact fee, we can't sign up for something we can't be sure we can perform. So the board at its meeting last Thursday adopted a resolution creating a moratorium by the district on signing any more landowner agreements and going forward with the vault program. And it directed that the manager not sign any more landowner agreements and that the board and the manager and council meet with the county and start a process of negotiating, because this is a two-party agreement, negotiate what do we need to do to change the process so that it fits what will be some evolving facts that we aren't quite certain of at the moment.
Doesn't the district have the authority to go ahead and declare the moratorium on their own? Does that require hours?
No, we did.
Right.
We did that.
So what do you need from us?
All the purpose of this meeting is pursuant to that resolution to say we need to be talking with you about changing the VOLT program in some manner because...
Well, it sounds like...
It isn't going to work in its present form in its entirety in all of the forms. We can't
Well, the bottom line is that Steve and you guys can't sign off on a building permit, so we don't have a building going on, and so the moratorium has shut off our ability to even issue building permits.
Right. We're not going to get you any yet because your process is... You need, before you sign a building permit or send it around for signing, you need to see a signed landowner agreement. You need to see the evidence of the water permit. You need to see the certification by the district that the road is in adequate to get to it. You need to have there's another document that has to do with noxious weeds or I don't remember. You have a couple of other disclosure documents that they have to sign. And when about five or six things, it's very clear, when five or six things happen, then you issue a building permit for a house on less than 5 acres.
Right.
That's how that happens.
The other thing is the acknowledgement that the landowner realizes that vaults are only issued for a limited use occupancy.
By state statute.
Which nobody has defined and which nobody has... Right. Figured out how to enforce.
So let me try to oversimplify this a little bit.
Yeah.
If we were not inclined, or if we were not motivated to be issuing more vault permits, or for allowing that kind of activity to take place, we don't need to do anything. You just took care of it for us.
And again, I guess the other question to follow up his is that if none of these are able to, and without solving the water problem and the exempt well situation, and we're getting water to these things have then become unbuildable.
Yes.
We're back to where we were before 1982.
Without central being installed.
That's correct. Now, the problem with that, and one of the reasons we want to talk about this, the last time we talked about creating some limitations on the VOLT program, you had them three or four deep around this room.
Yeah, I remember.
Okay, and the truth of the matter is, if you can't, let me make one other explanation. I know Aaron and the state engineer's office are also looking at the fact that the statute, where it describes that there is a presumption of no injury for certain exempt wells, it is a presumption if that well serves only one residence and has in-house use only, has no lawn, has no livestock, has a maximum use of like a half acre foot a year or something like that. I don't remember exactly what it is. But also has the return flow from the well in the same drainage.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what, I know Aaron in the state engineer's office know about that, given what I've seen. If you applied that adequately, every lot in the Morrison Creek Basin that Woodmore has planted that's not built on cannot get an exempt well because the effluent from the vault is delivered to the Little Morrison Basin. It's delivered to the plant, which isn't in the Morrison Creek Basin. You know, if somebody wants to come up with $1 million to build a septic plant in up there in Black Horse 1... We can solve that problem, but
well, thanks.
If they want to do $1 million. We can put some lines in.
Well, thanks for being brief.
So we wanted to advise you of what we've done, what we know, what our concerns are, what our problems are. The board is going to have to meet and continue to assess this. Obviously, the implications of this can be substantial. If the lots up in the south end cannot be built upon without somebody building an augmentation supply, there's likely to be a lot of proposals and pressures for people to go to somebody to build a supply.
An augmentation supply.
An augmentation supply. Well, and my guess is, Kevin, in the Upper Yampa District, you're going to hear from those people that say, can you build us a reservoir? Either on Bushy Creek or over on Morrison Creek. Or pick up the CDE Johnson's ponds and convert those to a supply, or figure out a supply.
Or we could start allowing people to build houses and truck water in. They could go buy their water from somewhere else.
That's something we don't do. So, and we can't do it. That's
not, we're not
that's,
doing that.
That's within, that's within your, that's within, that's why we want to have some discussions. We expect that as the implications of this become apparent among lot owners and realtors and people, there are going to be some levels of outcry. We haven't had a lot yet. At our Thursday meeting, John Troca, the SPOA president, was in attendance. He drafted a letter, which we, Steve and I looked at and looked like it was a fair representation of the situation, and sent it out to, I think, all lot owners on their email lists.
Most of the lot owners, Stagecoach.
Most of the lot owners.
They have on their email.
I asked Steve earlier today what level of phone calls has he had, and he's had some, but they aren't marching against his office yet. Maybe nobody knows which office to march against. That way, you know, we're sending them over to Aaron.
Well, I'm...
Aaron, go see
yes,
Aaron.
I'm deflecting, yeah.
But we, clearly this is an issue that would affect, it's going to affect valuations. It's going to affect resale consequences. It's going to affect consolidations. Consolidations may become much more attractive because if you can consolidate and have the sewage
leach field
fluid in a septic program, you're now returning it to the same drainage, and it may get around that problem. It may still be, you know, in a subdivision that otherwise is problematic. For your information, we advised Aaron of, we know of three circumstances that is kind of caught in the transition of this. We have two people that we signed up lot owner agreements with that have applications in for exempt well permits that have not been acted upon. One of them's back in Horseback. Horseback was probably approved later than June 1, 1972, so we don't know how that one's going to pan out. The other one is in South Shore. That may or may not be covered under the ability to get a contract from the Upper Yampa District. We don't know the layout of, that. The third one is this poor lady who bought a house that the contractor connected to the well that is only permitted for one residence and connected to. You know all about that. So those we'll have to try to figure out how to deal with as this moves along. But by adopting the moratorium, we're not going to have any more that we know of that'll be in flux. Now keep in mind there are some wells that were well permits that were should exempt well permits we should out there before 2006 that will say that they can have lawns and three houses and
all kinds of stuff.
Horses, two horses or whatever the deal is. Those may be, and we have not followed through to determine where those are, whether that'll be helpful to anybody, whether the permit is large enough to be able to include a neighbor lot in the description, or if there is some issues that would have to require a modification of the permit and what that would trigger. We don't, there's a lot of information we don't know. We're just aware that we've got a big problem, we're gonna hear an outcry, and we as a district are not capable of directing the changes necessary other than stopping in our tracks.
Until we hear from the engineer.
Yes, we're going to need to hear from the division engineer, state engineer, where they're wanting to come out on this. We want to keep conversing with Aaron. Like to be able to see where they're heading before they finally sign the names and chisel it in stone so we can see if there's, you know, anything that we can do to to make it at all palatable. But it, you know, there, it, if you got the south end becomes unmarketable, we're going to have people come in who wouldn't do so before that will want to get out of the district because they'll say you're never going to be able to service.
That's not going to do them any good, is it?
That's not, well, it ain't going to, but it's going to save them the mill levy, which is not that great. It's basically we have a 20 mill levy now, but
assessed valuation on them isn't very high. So
yeah, so we, you know, I don't know where all this.
You don't think it would bring the district to its knees to lose that mill levy?
I don't think we've evaluated how much of our assessed valuation
each one of
is in the south there. Yeah. They aren't high numbers even now.
Yeah.
They aren't high numbers.
That end of the district took a huge hit in the recession for sure.
So let's hear from Aaron.
Yeah, well, I'll say that Tom has done a great job explaining the situation. I do want to point out that this evaluation that we're looking at, the state engineer and myself, does not just apply to Stagecoach. This is every subdivision within Routt County and over Perforated Basin. So it would really be an evaluation of how can we be issuing exempt well permits? And some of that is based on how was the subdivision created. So again, you know, the over-appropriated areas of most focus would be everything upstream of the deal on the upper river, including all tributaries, as well as the entire Elk River drainage. And we have pulled a halt on well permitting in those areas as well, like one discussed and maybe further Columbine area. And was a later subdivision that was created in 1982. So that's been on halt until we've made a decision. So, you know, really the question does become, should we be stepping back and looking at whether or not we should be looking at the collective effect of depletions, you know, not just looking, making a presumption of bond injury, because up to this point we've been making the presumption of bond injury. But now we need to step back and say, well, wait, should we really be looking at the cumulative, really is the problem, or cumulative effect of all these wells, lots being developed upon and wells being constructed on them. So we are in the process of drafting a letter, and it will be to the Routt County Board of Commissioners. It will be a letter to the county. With obviously, like Morrison Creek and probably Steeple Lake, or you know, the appropriate people CC'd on it, but it's going to be directed to the county commissioners. So, you know, that's kind of the in a nutshell. I don't know if you have specific questions, but I can explain augmentation. I think, you know, Doug and Tim, I think you understand augmentation. I did bring a couple of maps if you want to see them. One specifically of South Shore, because South Shore is part in the augmentation plan, some isn't. And then a map also that shows kind of the zoomed out Stagecoach that shows area A of the augmentation, A1 specifically of the augmentation plan. But definitely if we decide we have to look at the collective, the cumulative depletions from these wells, augmentation is going to be required before we can issue a well.
What's your timeline?
We're hoping by the end of this month, September, not the 31st, end of September. I will say, though, that we are going to be taking this to the Attorney General's office, and you know that then it's going to be fully vetted at that point. And so we
fully vetted by whom?
What's that?
Fully vetted by whom?
The Attorney General's.
I'm just speaking to Tom's concern is this process is going to take place entirely within the Division Engineer's office. Be vetted by the Attorney General, and then the order come down from on high without public comment, input by elected officials.
I think at that point in time, we're out of the business anyhow, so the only thing that's going to change is if somebody takes the crusade and decides to challenge the order.
Right.
That's what's going to end up being then.
It can't be challenged, right, according to the statutes.
Well, yes, but I would guess it could be challenged directly by an organization, and it's also clear that a denial of an exempt well permit allows the disappointed applicant to go to water court as well. So whether you do it by declaratory judgment or
by someone appealing a denial of a permit, because they'll put in for a permit and then it would get denied for an augmentation plan, and the person could, but they have a, that's a fairly short time frame. That's like less than 60 days, I think you have to do that. So I don't know. I don't know whether the district board of directors will have any interest in
challenging
or not. As I say, they have not. We did have time, nor was it appropriate, because we don't know the scope of the order that will come down to discuss those strategies. But obviously, there will be I envision there are less than a handful of owners of multiple former Woodmore lots out at Stagecoach. One of them is an ex-Denver county judge. And I don't know how they will be affected with their holdings, or whether they may regard it as a serious enough impact on their assets to warrant trying to proceed, or warrant trying to get Morrison Creek or SPOA or somebody else to proceed. I don't know, but I do know that there are some people that may have significant disappointment with respect to the value of their assets.
Well, and at the present time, totally. I mean, not even you guys, but I mean, the South Route Medical Center and all the rest of the ones that are counting on that mill levy too. I mean, and we just got done finishing up valuations, and so now we have this new, and we'll probably come back a whole bunch of abatements on these things, because they'll, you know, because now the situation, and maybe not, but you know, it will be for the next reappraisal. Yeah.
Sure, and you just finished up, or I guess you're finished. I don't know where you are on your update of the community plan, the Stagecoach area community plan.
We're done. We just finished it. Just adopted it.
You just adopted it?
Yeah, you got to reopen it.
Perfect timing. 6-year process. We just
right now, 6-year process. You just adopted it, and you got a significant change in some assumptions.
I think one of the things that's most interesting to me is that. You know, Round County doesn't really approve new subdivisions, and certainly, I guess, we, depending on the order that comes out, we may never approve another subdivision.
Yeah, but if we
unless there's municipal
unless
law.
Unless providing water and 5 acres for sewer,
right.
Probably not going to get a well, though.
Likely the order, you're not going to be issuing well permits on 5-acre parcels.
No, I mean, unless there is a plan for augmentation. I mean, you know, there's development everywhere throughout the state, and most of the state is overbuilt, right? There's many, many augmentation
plans out there. The 35-acre parcels remain unaffected.
Right. Okay. You know, and I will mention that, you know, with the decision that's made by our office, it really could go either way, but we really are hoping to find a way to be able to continue to issue permits the way we have. Utilizing really specific statutes to do so. But you talk about challenges, we can get a challenge whichever way you go.
Yeah.
If we go the route of continuing to make this presumption of non-injury and issuing well permits, a water right owner can come forward and say, no, I'm being injured. You've made a poor decision. You need to look at the cumulative effects. And whether that's the city of Steamboat Springs, Colorado Water Conservation Board, or some ditch owner, irrigation water right owner. So we could be challenged either way. We recognize that. I think if we go the route of determining that we need to look at the cumulative effects, probably a greater chance for a challenge. And we recognize that.
Aaron, can you just clarify, is this a unique situation to Route County? I mean, isn't this current?
Not if we've got two of them.
No, it's really not.
Because there is this IGA that exists, the special circumstances.
That I don't know.
But the vault agreement is the vault. To my knowledge, there may not be any other place in Colorado that has this vault agreement arrangement between governments.
Right.
I mean, it isn't up at Steamboat Lake, and I don't know that I've ever run into another district that has
Woodmore was
the same thing.
Was a large corporation that developed all over Colorado, and we were just one of those friends in the early 70s.
But I mean, the division doesn't care about our vault agreements.
No,
right.
They don't.
Right. Yeah.
Other regional but to your knowledge, this is a unique situation.
Maybe
yes, Steve? The IGA and the vaults are unique, but looking at accumulative effects of, you know, as a result of, you know, development and subdivision is not.
Right. So there must have been somebody looking at a solution for the water for the exempt well somewhere else in the state.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's augmentation, you know, people have been developing.
So augmentation. So that's still what we're trying to pursue, that kind of mitigation.
Right. But
Steve, maybe Eric can talk a little bit about that clause and the recidivism seemingly might exempt.
I don't read it that way. It specifically refers to water rights, even if it is an underground water right, not individual well permits. And so I still don't read it that clause would apply to this situation.
The one that Tom pointed out, the page 8 and 7B or something? Is that what?
Yeah, that's what she's referring to.
I thought it was pretty explicit that it wasn't going to affect the
water rights.
Water rights.
Not well permits.
Oh, okay.
Mike?
Well, isn't the well permit a water right?
No.
Another question is maybe a stupid question, but I was always under the understanding that an exempt well could service three houses. Some can.
If you're not in an over-appropriated area, yes, up to three. If you're in an over-appropriated area with lots greater than 35 acres, yes, you can.
Good. On something new every day.
Are there areas of the Colorado that are not over-appropriated?
Absolutely. A lot of Division 6, the area, there's many areas that are not over-appropriated. Division 7 and some division.
Did the RISID, the Steamboat City RISID, caused the over-appropriation as was stated earlier?
Yes, everything south of town. Here, so,
could we get out of the over-appropriation if the city of Steamboat were to release the RISID, or whatever you do to a RISID?
Great question. They voluntarily have the water right abandoned, so, given the hundreds of thousands of dollars it took to get the water right.
Yeah, I wouldn't count on that, Mike.
No, I'm looking for a place to send the realtors.
I like you thinking. Well, this has been really cheery.
Well, we appreciate your taking some time to let us tell you what we know.
And get prepared for the onslaught of the public comment coming in. To pump augmentation water, it would almost be as good, just to still pump water, even in smaller doses or something, you would think.
We've had board members in the past that said by the time you decided you could pump water up from the reservoir to cover the augmentation, you might as well do the interconnection between the north system and the south system.
And you got
physical water there.
And that's what I was just saying. I was saying the same thing.
Yeah, you wouldn't spend $2 million to run a line up so to dribble it back into a stream to come back down.
So that you could drill wells for it, yes.
Yeah.
No.
Chad, do you have anything? Any comments about how this affects you and your operation? Steps that we should be taking? I guess we're just all in a holding pattern, right?
Well, when we talked with Aaron this morning, I thought it would be a good idea to write this all down, show some maps, maybe a handout for not only Stagecoach but Steamboat Lake, as far as, notifying the landowners up there what their options are. And there's still that question of, what does it take to get an augmentation plan? So maybe work with Kevin or, just to help, because that was the whole point, in my understanding of the vault agreement, it was to give some opportunity for development when there wasn't any. And now if that's going away or to be made more difficult, what can we do to at least, create.
So what you want to do, you want us to help assist any district to with information or even assistance with developing
something. We don't know what we don't know right now.
Yeah, I think right now we need to let the mud settle out of the water here and see what
right now.
There's nothing to do right now.
The district provides, and then we have some further discussion.
Other than to tell people to walk in the door, hey,
can't do it.
Problem out there. We're not sure what the solution is.
I guess it's probably a good wake up call for realtors, Troy. I guess you guys are probably going to have a big due diligence thing selling new units out of there, too.
I sent an email 2 days or 3 days ago. Got one response.
Is that right? Well, Kevin had a comment.
See, can I just ask some question maybe of Aaron? There's a plan of 5-acre lots that I think we did in the late 90s. So I'm not sure they're in the district or not. I guess they are, but they're right above Stetson's old log cabin up there, Frazier. Now, for those 5-acre lots, which I think were presumed to be able to get an exempt well, do they now have to provide augmentation water to build on that 5-acre lot?
Yeah, you know, Troy, it is going to depend on how that subdivision was approved. Were they exempted, you know, were they exempted from the subdivision regulations, then yes, they could. They could get a well permit. Or if our office provided a letter at the time, so you'd say it was prior to the base becoming over-appropriated, we got a referral letter from the county. We responded to that and said water is currently available for appropriation. You can't get well permits. Then we would continue to honor that and allow people to get well permits. So there's kind of some variations in what else, well, or not be what else, but how we really got to ask ourselves how was that area somehow.
Kevin?
Well, I just wanted to say, regardless of all these other complexities, we've sent the coverage of where our augmentation areas are to your GIS department.
Oh.
And they have said they would work with us to use your excellent GIS system so that people can go
That's
on
the way we can help.
Find their parcel and find out whether they're in or out or not. I mean, that's probably.
Our GIS currently has that overlay available through the website.
Yes. Are you saying that these weren't accurate?
Yeah, I mean, these don't necessarily show the area that Tom was talking about. The area A1 that we can't put augmentation contracts in place is the entire Little Morrison drainage, but in what do you call that next drainage? Over
Middle Creek.
And the divide Creek. Between Middle Creek and Morrison Creek. On the Middle Creek side, we can. So we want to just make sure that there's accurate information out there for the realtors, for the homeowners, so people know what they're dealing with now. The second thing, of course, is the Morrison Creek Reservoir could provide a augmentation source for a lot of this and provide a lot of other benefits. So I'm not sad about that.
Yeah, good luck with that, right?
Not in my lifetime.
Kevin, like, just for confirmation, what you're seeing there is your shade pile that's overlaid there. So I'm wondering if it's just a misunderstanding or you can't see some of the lines on the map.
I think, well, it could be that I can't see some of the lines on the map, and it could be that whoever put these down didn't understand the difference between the two different parts of the future area A.
Oh, we did not. We would have included.
Okay, so this is the part where Tom is talking about we can't write contracts because we didn't have the augmentation source in the Little Morrison Creek drainage.
Yeah.
But we can over on the other side, so we have to make sure that that is
accurate.
Yeah, you really have to think of three areas in effect out there. The Little Morrison Creek Basin, which is within the plan, but we can't issue contracts without first getting an approved source for augmentation water. The Morrison Creek area of Stagecoach, which is not in the plan, even if we could provide augmentation water for there, Upper Yampa would have to go amend the plan to include that. And then the remaining portion, which is within the plan, outside of those two basins, and Upper Yampa can issue a little augmentation contracts for to support the. Supporting them for us.
And just to, you know, to talk to Tim's comment again is the Upper Yampa, the Morrison Creek Reservoir is part of the state water plan. There's money being made available for development of storage. People recognize that we have very little storage in this basin compared to our size. And the Upper Yampa District is going to need partners to develop this plan, or it will be beyond all of our lifetimes. But I think that with that, and with support of the CWCP, the recognition that we have a better chance at that than than many people might think. So
sounds like you're in favor of building that reservoir, Kevin.
Certainly we should.
That is take this opportunity to sit.
We should evaluate that.
So let me understand Morrison Creek Reservoir, though. So it would actually pipe water over to Little Morrison Creek high enough in the basin that it could replace the appropriate.
At least a large part of this, and you know, I was looking at what. I mean, there's a lot of engineering that needs to be done, but we can make a big of this available.
Did you have something, Bob?
Yeah, just kind of a general comment that I'd like for whoever wants to listen to think about. We're at the cusp of having a means of quantifying cumulative impact. And it goes beyond water. It goes on in Ralph County. We talked about it in the Planning Commission a lot about oil and gas development, and then that dried up and went away. Secondary dwelling units. Again, the question of cumulative impacts and how do we deal with that in policy. Here's an example. One of the options that your office could come up with is to kind of specify the cumulative impact of all these wells is more than will be acceptable. So it's kind of quantified.
Yeah.
But as a broader general term in planning within the county, within the state, what are the cumulative impacts?
Looks like they're going to simplify the process for us.
Yeah, maybe this is an example of how to deal with that issue.
Anybody else? Chris?
Make sure I got this right. I think Tom said that there were already 1,500 wells drilled out. There were that houses, or is that both?
Lots. 1,500 lots. Unimproved lots.
Unimproved lots.
Vacant, right. Unimproved lots, many of which have no road to them.
You can't find them.
No, no facilities like to them.
Okay. And no water.
And no district water line, I tell you that.
So when the 34 wells are
say it's affinity, needs to be reviewed by her or somebody else as to whether somebody's going to have a lot that's in or out.
No, the 30 are in addition to the exist. There are an existing
what's that?
10 no. wells that the district has, and there would be 30 more potentially covered by this augmentation plan. The augmentation plan that the district is doing is hopefully will be effective for decades and decades and decades to cover the potential full build-out of Stagecoach with potable municipal central water.
It's part of the master water supply plan for the whole
right.
district and for build-out of the area, anticipating extension of a lot of lines.
So the people have already drilled wells, then they'll be cut off, and then what happens to those wells? Are you going to utilize them also?
Well, they won't be cut off unless the district has constructed, or someone, it isn't going to be the district that doesn't have the money, someone constructs and gives to the district central trunk lines that provide water available. Then they will be required to tap into the central system and abandon their well.
And then you'd have enough water to provide for those 1,500 lots.
Yes. The master augmentation plan and all of the studies with respect to the underground water supply. There's a very large underground water supply under the Browns Park Formation underneath the Stagecoach area that is being replenished.
3,000 acre feet
a year. So there is the underground, the deep wells that the district has and would continue to have will be able to supply, given the studies that the district has obtained, will be able to supply the physical raw water for the potable system for a build out of the district based upon filling all of these subdivisions, which would create an area of about, I think it's about 5,000 people.
wants those
3,000 units, 3,500 units.
Rather than conditional.
Right, and as they become used, the district will, over a period of time, take its of the 10, some of the water is absolute, some more is being sought to be made absolute, and over time will be made absolute. You drill new wells, take that water absolute as you connect it in. I mean, it's designed to be under what's known as the Great and Growing Cities Doctrine, to a program that you're going to have the water rights that will last for decades.
Tom, so you'll have the water. Where will the infrastructure come from through that whole build out?
For the build out, the infrastructure will have to come from
LID.
Somewhere else.
LID.
I don't think we need Tegan to continue minutes here, do we?
Yeah, local improvement districts, somebody that wants to come in. It's the same story that's been true and I've been speaking about for 40 years. There is no man on the white horse that has showed up yet.
Okay.
And if everybody keeps waiting for the man on the white horse, it may be another 40 years. But the district is healthy enough financially to deal with the raw water supply and treatment and the sewage treatment. But it has on its horizon the necessity to replace its sewer plant. That sewer plant was a package plant. It was designed for a life of 40 years. It's been 45 years. And every time the district has gone into asking some engineer, how are we doing with the plant? They always say, you're getting another 6, 7, 8 years, and boy, you better start to be thinking about replacing it, and we can help you with that.
Kevin, you get the last word.
I was just going to say that if it might be beneficial at some point for us to come in and just run through the calculations of what goes into the augmentation plan with you and your planning staff. The consumptive use of people in their houses is incredibly small. Right. And so I find that people often have, there's not enough water for the people. And there's plenty of physical water supply for people to use inside their houses. The consumptive use is extremely small. And in a well septic system situation, 90% of the water that they divert is going back, through that septic system. So I just think it would be nice to show you those numbers so people can have those in mind. And
you don't need to show them to us. You can show them to staff.
Yeah, show them to Shannon. All right.